gift to Mark because he gets to go on vacation and didn't have to work real hard to find somebody to cover for him. So that's some of my motivation. There's several parts to what I'm going to say. The first is just a little bit of my recent life so that you know a little bit more about me. That's part of being in community, is to know each other. Right here is my brother, David. Those of you who don't know that David is my brother. I didn't have the time to have him check some of my talk because some of it relates to things he knows a lot more about than I do. But anyhow, both of our parents were born in 1916, and my father graduated from West Point and was an officer in the Signal Corps. So we moved a lot as we grew up, and that was a big part of becoming who I am. The most memorable place we lived was Taiwan when I was in middle school and David was in finishing high school. I lived in California for 20 years before I moved to Greensboro in 1984. Don and I, my husband, married in 1993. Those of you who are good in math will realize we've been married 25 years, which seems amazing to us because when we married, I was 46 and he was 47. This was my third marriage and his first. That Don loves me and I love him permeates every part of my life and has transformed my life. When we married, I had two young children, 6 and 12. Don fully embraced the hard job of helping me to parent my two sons. You know him today as someone in a wheelchair or on crutches. But Don had been an avid bicyclist, and we did some bicycling, but when we discovered kayaks, we were kayaking as often as possible, including camping trips to the Outer Banks. And when kayaking became too strenuous, we got a small sailboat, and we sailed and slept in our little boat. And when we could no longer do the walking involved in setting up the boat, we moved on to a trailer and motorhome camping. I guess you could say we like camping. But Don had polio as a child, and when we got married, we had no understanding of the implications of what is called post-polio syndrome, which is what has impacted his physical abilities. Don and I have also shared an enjoyment of making music. First we played recorders, and then now we're playing dulcimers and enjoying that. When I was 56, I went back to school to study science. I've always loved science. It's part of my heritage from my father, who was a scientist all of his life in many ways. But I never pursued science myself because it involves math, and math was very, very difficult for me. So I had to start with things such as high school algebra at GTCC. I loved every class and had to work very hard, but being able to get grounded in science has been a very important part of informing my worldview and why I think appreciating the ability of science and technology to help us solve the very pressing problems of our world is absolutely critical. We know quite a bit, this is the second part, we know quite a bit about the history of human beings. We're called Homo sapiens. There were quite a few species in the Homo genus before we appeared. There was nothing inevitable about the evolution of what we call modern human beings. Early humans left Africa and spread northward and encountered people we call the Neanderthals. Many of us apparently have some Neanderthal genes. That's something we've learned recently. But the Neanderthal people went extinct as Homo sapiens began to spread across the world. Humans have always been migrants, and we migrated to every continent and nook and cranny of the globe. For a very long time, people were what we now call hunter-gatherers, and we did not have any large population centers. For much of human history, survival was often precarious. After agriculture was developed, and it seems to have developed independently in different parts of the planet, it was possible to have much larger population centers and to have people who did not need to spend all of their time in a very egalitarian way of hunting or gathering to survive. Agriculture made it possible to have some people who could have more than enough food and more power or status or influence. War was always a feature of human societies. In pre-agricultural societies, war was very personal. Someone from another tribe killed your brother or your uncle or your father, and you sought revenge. In societies with agriculture and an abundance of food, war was very different. You could have men who did not need to spend their energy finding food and could be a warrior class. Human history is a history of migration marked by wars, small and large, invasions, exterminations, occupations, assimilation, and also trade, cooperation, and coexistence. What I want you to do is to think back on your ancestors, back to the beginnings of human societies. As you look back on how your ancestors interacted with other human populations, realize that sometimes you were the aggressors. You were victorious, and you took land that had been occupied by other people. Sometimes groups did interact and assimilate more peaceably, and trade and cooperation was possible. Other times, entire populations were eliminated with genocide or forced to flee. When religions came into being, people were born into a religion, and often people were conquered into a religion. All of this is very, very evident in our world today. What I'm trying to say is that you, by way of your ancestors, have been in very many different roles vis-a-vis other people over time. You have been the victor. You have been the vanquished. You have had the best land. And other times you were on the margins and struggling to survive. Sometimes you were in power, and other times you were enslaved. You have been all things in the history of the human race. Today we have written history, and now we have real-time reports of this process of war and attempts to take land and resources away from other people. We have awareness and a perspective that is fairly new. Throughout most of human history, there was no records and there was a lot of time, and you forgot that you used to be something else, that you've lost your former identity. Increasingly, people are disturbed by violence and coercion, but we are struggling with how to resolve what we increasingly consider injustice. I started to write this talk before I had picked up Steven Pinker's book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. I was aware of some of the research that supports the idea that violence has actually declined over time. I'm going to quote you from the beginning of the book. This book is about what may be the most important thing that has ever happened in human history. Believe it or not, and I know that most people do not, violence has declined over long stretches of time, and today we may be living in the most peaceable era in our species' existence. The decline, to be sure, has not been smooth. It has not brought violence down to zero, and it is not guaranteed to continue. But it is an unmistakable development visible on scales from millennia to years, from the waging of wars to the spanking of children. No aspect of life is untouched by the retreat from violence. Daily existence is very different if you always have to worry about being abducted, raped, or killed, and it's hard to develop sophisticated arts, learning, or commerce if the institutions that support them are looted and burned as quickly as they are built. We enjoy the peace we find today because people in past generations were appalled by the violence in their time and worked to reduce it. And so we should work to reduce the violence that remains in our time. End of quote. I think we're all aware that religions have been major players in the use of violence, and that religion has often been inextricably bound up with the worldview of a conquering nation. This awareness of the harm inflicted on people in the name of Christianity has weighed on my mind as I pondered my relationship to the Christian faith. So here we are in Presbyterian Church of Covenant. I ask myself, what role does my religion, if I choose to have a religion, play in this process of the world becoming less violent and more compassionate and supportive of the well-being of all people? Christianity is a religion based on the life and teachings of a man we call Jesus. Even though there is pressure to turn every religion and every philosophy into support and justification for inequality and for people in power to maintain that power, Jesus, as Mark Sandlin has often reminded us, was a poor person whose teachings point to a different world order. Again, this is a quote from Steven Pinker. Quote, across time and space, the more peaceable societies also tend to be richer, healthier, better educated, better governed, more respectful of their women, and more likely to engage in trade. Certainly these are things that I value. Today, there are individual peoples and groups who are fearful of losing privilege or power or control and continue to believe that their worldview, their religion, their culture is the only one that should exist. If we look at the long view of human history, which we just did, we can surmise that no group can or will maintain ascendancy forever. The only way to have more assurance that your descendants are able to live a peaceable and prosperous life is to work toward peace and prosperity for everyone. I'm very proud to be a part of this church. I understand that some churches study Bart Ehrman, who many of you know who he is, that he has written a lot of books on the Bible, especially the New Testament, and that a lot of churches use that. But we studied his lecture on how Jesus became God. We also are now studying John Shelby Spong's most recent book, Unbelievable. It is difficult to come to terms with church history and to discover that much of what you thought were the tenets of your faith were actually political decisions made long ago to support the authority, power, and control of people who were primarily concerned with issues of power, authority, and control, rather than with how to apply Jesus' directive to treat one another with respect, kindness, compassion, and fairness. There are many forms of violence. Some are more subtle than others. When I first started to attend this church, Jim Dollar was the minister and Julie Strope was the associate minister. So the Presbyterian Church was supportive of women being ordained ministers. But the Presbyterian Church USA was still struggling with recognizing the full personhood of LGBT men and women and did not allow persons such as Chipper Knuckles, who many of you know, to become or remain ordained ministers. Salem Presbytery ratified the amendment to the Book of Order allowing LGBT persons to be seen as full persons and allowed to be ordained ministers in May 2011, and the rule book took effect for all presbyteries on July 10, 2011. Most of you know that the Episcopal Church also had changed church policy about women becoming priests and for LGBT persons to become priests. But we know that this change to policy or belief in Christian churches is difficult for many churches, and many continue to believe and practice that LGBT men, people and women cannot be right with God. Not everyone is comfortable with this change, and we are proud that Presbyterian Church of the Covenant is what is called a more light Presbyterian Church, where everyone knows that they will be accepted and affirmed. Not long after I started to serve on the session, a document came to me for our possible approval. The document was called Affirmation of Creation. When I saw the title, my heart sank. I thought, oh no, am I going to have to leave the session or leave the church if this is something that is going to ask me to have an anti-science stand on science? I read the document and I was very pleasantly surprised. I don't know where this is now in the process of being affirmed by all presbyteries. I didn't have time to research that, but I'm going to read to you some from it. The language being from the Presbytery, if you've ever read things from the Presbytery Church, it's in very, very religious language, so bear with me. This is a quote. Over the centuries, some Christians have sought to deny observations of nature by reference to Scripture. In the 5th century, Augustine warned that claims about nature, contrary to human reason and experience, but supposedly derived from Scripture, should be avoided, lest they make Christians seem ignorant and the object of scornful laughter. Yet we recognize that God has called forth in Homo sapiens an exploratory curiosity and a critical intellect. A fruit of these gifts is our capacity for scientific inquiry. One of the conclusions of the paper is, quote, that by virtue of the powers of intellect and creativity called forth in us by God, we bear exceptional responsibility for the future of the earth and all its constitutive creatures. So in conclusion, human beings are unique in our ability to be destructive, largely to our intelligence and our ability to develop and use technology. We are the only animals who will sully its nest. We tolerate allowing governments and corporations to pollute our homes, the air, land, sea, and communities that we live in for money. We are also creatures who are capable of compassion, empathy, and working cooperatively for the common good. I believe that the future of all life and our planet rests in our ability to apply science and technology guided by love. So each and every day in all of our actions, in how we treat other people, in the solutions we seek for problems, can be a part of this great movement away from violence and toward a more peaceable and healing way of being a human being. I will conclude with a statement from John Shelby Spong's book, Unbelievable, where he says the same thing, but in some very different language. Love is never disembodied, never found or experienced apart from life. Love passes through us. It neither originates nor terminates in us. We receive it, and only having received it are we able to pass it on. Love does not keep to be consumed later as leftovers. It cannot be preserved. It must be shared, or it will die. So love opens each of us to a dimension of a human experience that is transcendent. Love relates us to something that is real, but something that we can neither create nor destroy. God is the name by which we call this experience of love. If God is love, the only way we can worship God is by loving others. Thank you. As with Mark, you have an opportunity to give feedback and to ask questions and enlighten us. I brought the book. It's Steven Pinker's most recent book, which is called the Better Angels of Our Nature. And I brought the book that you can find us at it.
I'm David, and I thank you for that delightful and dizzying trip through family and human history. And I'm sitting here remembering, a lot of my growing up was always being the new kid and always being beat up and being bullied. There's a lot of my childhood that I don't remember. I think it's protection. I don't remember those things because they were so painful. So I think it's really, I think the call for caring about other people and love is really, really important. That's one of the things I value about this group, because that's really what we need in order to, care about each other and make things better so we can have less violence.
Violence seems to beget violence. Well, thank you. And actually, I have a memory related to violence that David was the perfect child as far as I could tell. I was the one that got spanked. I was not perfect. So, yes, Tim. Now we know. Yes, Tim.
Thanks, Elsie, for your message. I read this morning with great sadness that our friend and fellow traveler, Logie Meacham, died early yesterday morning. So I remember him playing here several times.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that was.
Elsie, I wanted to thank you for your talk this morning. It was good for you to share your background and your growing up and your worldview, and it was just very refreshing and a challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you. I'm Judy. Thank you, Elsie, for your message today. One of the thoughts that I had when you were going through the discussion about how the Homo sapiens eventually went out, it reminded me of a visit, we've made more than one, to the Museum of Man in San Diego.
Oh.
And they have a wonderful display there of many things, but it made such an impression on me because I remember seeing all these different groups of the family of Homos, and then the Homo sapiens went out and killed everybody else off. And I don't know how surprising that was to me at the time. So you reminded me of a good educational experience I had a while back. And lots of other good things about your speech. Thank you, Elsie.
Yeah, human beings can be pretty nasty. And yet part of our evolution is all these wonderful things that our capacity for compassion and for caring and for cooperating, those too are part of what evolved to make us human beings, and that we can draw on more and more as we move forward in time. Anyone else?
That was very interesting.
Thank you.
I had to chuckle when you said Neanderthal. I've done Ancestry, and I've done 23andMe DNA tests. And the 23andMe came back with, I have more Neanderthal markers than 94% of the other respondents.
Wow.
And 23andMe. I knew I had a lot of Scandinavian, Swedish. It was 52%, but I wasn't expecting the Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.